To say that we live on this side of Jesus' resurrection is to assert that we live in an Easter world, a world where sin and death and the threat of death and the fear of death no longer are in control or have the last word, for that last word belongs solely to God and to life. What matters is not what the world says or does, but how we look at the world and how we approach life through the eyes of God. That's what faith is all about, entrusting ourselves and our lives to what is not always apparent or obvious, that love and gentleness and goodness are the best way to live, not power, not violence, not domination. To live in an Easter world is to give ourselves over fully to that, no matter what, no matter how foolish it may seem or how foolish it may make us seem. Violence and abuse, of course, whether physical, verbal, or emotional, violence and abuse of any kind are self-fulfilling and self-perpetuating, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a slur for a slur, a threat for a threat, a bomb for a bomb, a drone for a drone. That's the way of the world. Revenge and retaliation and violence begetting violence, mutual assured destruction. But Jesus teaches a different way, both in word and in deed. A different way that finds its ultimate vindication in the triumph of Easter, the victory of life over death, of good over evil, of love over fear and hate. The violence in our world continues all too unchecked. It is so commonplace that it's easy to take for granted and assume it's something we can do nothing about. And so we shrug our shoulders, turn a blind ear, eye, and deaf ear to it, praying that it doesn't happen to us or to anyone we know and love. Need I make a list? Afghanistan? Korea? Lori Bresnahan in North Syracuse and the rape of the young girl with her, the home invasion and murder of a Texas district attorney and his wife, the teenager in Nova Scotia who took her own life after rape charges and sexting charges against four schoolmates were ignored and went unprosecuted, the murders of the school children and teachers in Newtown, Connecticut, and the more than 1,000 persons who have been killed by guns in this country since that awful day. The ongoing violence and civil war in Syria. Need I go on? To live in an Easter world is to say no. No to all these and all other forms of violence, from the personal level to the international. To do that may make us stand out and may make us unpopular, but that too is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Just ask Stephen, who began his career as a disciple serving breakfast and lunch and dinner to those in need, and as a result being so well thought of. That's at the end of chapter 6 of the book of Acts. And by the end of chapter 7, Stephen lies dead, the victim of rage and rocks. in between, five things have happened. Stephen has moved, first of all, from serving the tables of hungry people to talking about what motivates him to live his life this way. Second, the Jewish opposition takes note of Stephen's influence, but are unable to silence or discredit him. Thirdly, as a result, they concoct false charges against him, just as they had done for Jesus. Fourth, Stephen defends himself by retelling the history of the Jewish people from Moses onward through the prophets, all pointing to and culminating in the coming of Jesus. And fifth, the authorities erupt violently against Stephen and his words. Few of us will ever experience what Stephen did. The choice between playing it safe and risking everything, status, position, popularity, even life itself, for Jesus' sake. But Stephen's story is told and recorded for a purpose. It stands as a reminder that we owe our very life to the God of love and nonviolence, and that playing it safe by denying or downplaying that truth is every bit as death-inducing as a hailstorm of stones or fists or bullets. Catholic sister Mary Lou Konecki, in one of her books, cites a conversation that she has had with a Benedictine monk named Bede Griffiths, reflecting what it would mean for those who make a lifelong commitment to follow Jesus, in particular those in monastic communities, but by implication to any who would make that same proclamation. What would it mean if those entering Christian communities were required to take a vow of nonviolence? She asked Bede Griffiths what he thought of the idea, and he wrote back in return, "I think a nonviolent attitude to life, as expressed in the Sermon on the Mount, should be basic to monastic life and could very well be the subject of a vow. It would apply to one's attitude to nature, rejecting all violation of nature by science and technology, showing a concern for plants and animals as well as human beings, and opposing the violence of political and economic structures. Nonviolence," he concludes, "should be integral to monastic life, extending not only to rejection of war and heavy armaments, but also to heavy industry and nuclear power, seeking to create a society of peace with nature and with God." Today, around us swirl many concerns, many causes, at the root of which is a struggle between violence and nonviolence. Today, during our fellowship time following worship, you have an opportunity to support the important work of Vera House in a struggle against domestic abuse and violence, simply with the purchase of a wristband or a pin to wear, indicating your support not just for the continued work of Vera House, but for what they stand for. Similarly, to be an Easter people is to listen to and partake in the gun access debate, to to hear the voices of those who say we can do nothing, and to hear instead Jesus saying, life, love, nonviolence. And perhaps to reframe the debate from that which focuses on the exact meaning and phrasing and punctuation of the Second Amendment to one that asks, what about the fundamental right to life and to liberty and the pursuit of happiness? What do those mean to those who lay dead as a result of unnecessary gun violence? In the debate around our own national budget, the weight given to concerns for raising up life and well-being here in America versus waging war around the world. Do we understand that one has a direct impact on the other, that every dollar we spend bombing persons elsewhere keeps us from teaching children and housing the homeless and feeding the hungry? As Beth said, Lord, make us instruments of your peace.